Hello and welcome to this emergency edition of the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk. Presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden just announced California Senator Kamala Harris as his running mate. While it may not be a surprise if you've been listening to this podcast over the past few months, it is historic. Harris is the first Asian American and the first Black woman in American history to be a general election candidate for president or vice president of either of the two major political parties. And here with me to discuss what Joe Biden's pick of Kamala Harris does and doesn't mean are senior politics reporter Perry Bacon Jr. How's it going, Perry?
Good to see you, Galen.
And also here with us is politics editor Sarah Frostenson. Hey, Sarah, how's it going?
Good. Hey, Galen.
All right. So, Perry, I think you've called this a couple times on this podcast recently, or more or less called it. What's your first reaction to the fact that it was the most seemingly likely pick in the end?
I'm not really into predictions, but what I was trying to say when I wrote about this and when I was talking about it was, in some ways, like, there's this whole theory that the party decides the candidate. That sort of failed in 2016, but it sort of predicted a little bit about Biden this time. And my whole sense was, like, a lot of people will say it's a personal chemistry question. Does the candidate like this person? And my view is always, no, Joe Biden is a member of a party who's got to be considering the coalition that he's leading and what it wants. So Joe Biden promised a woman. So that was first of all. And then once you narrow that down, who are the most qualified people? Senators, probably people who ran for president before. So you're down, in my view, that kind of narrowed it closer to Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren, people like that. You know, the George Floyd protest and his death, the protest afterward, I think did sort of put more pressure to pick a Black woman. So when you really looked at who were the sort of most natural candidates were, I sort of thought it's Kamala Harris's to lose, and maybe Joe Biden goes in a different direction and picks like Susan Rice. But I thought it was always the most logical person who's run for president before. Like, she's to the left of Joe Biden, but she's not as left as Elizabeth Warren. You can imagine her doing it in a debate pretty well. She's Black, she's Asian, so she has the diversity in the party. So I just think she's the most logical person for the job. And on some level, no matter what Joe Biden's staff says about how she impressed in the interview or whatever they'll claim in the TikTok, in reality, like, me, a random person, was able to pretty easily tell you who might be the pick, just because this was a very logical pick.
Perry, you just wrote a piece for the website, which for anybody who has been paying attention to our website over the past couple hours or so, no, you did not manage to write that entire piece in the 5 minutes from when Biden announced. You had pre-written it, so good on you. And I guess the fact that it was the predictable choice made it more simple for us here at 538, so thank you. And we're going to go through a lot of the different things that you discuss in the article. I encourage people to go read it. But getting this out of the way up front, Sarah, how much does a vice presidential pick affect the ultimate outcome of an election?
The research we have in terms of the electoral impact of a vice presidential candidate is pretty limited. It doesn't actually have that much of a role. As Perry was saying earlier, there's a lot of elements where it can be good for party unity or for signaling a direction of the party. And I know we'll talk about that a bit more later. But studies that have looked to see, you know, well, is there a home state's advantage? Or is this idea that now, you know, more women or more Black Americans will turn out to vote? The research is much more mixed on that. There isn't a woman block vote. And in terms of what we do know about Black voters turning out, because Harris is now on the ticket, you know, we only have one sample before this, Obama, right? And yes, Black voter turnout was up then, but it's a different dynamic. He was at the top of the ticket, he was running for president, and the research points in opposite directions there. So the overall effect in terms of her being added to the ticket electorally is hard to measure and would be small, and is how our forecast would treat that as well.
When I look at the VP pick, I think people are voting for the top of the ticket. But I do think in some cases, the VP pick affects how they see the top of the ticket. I think the prominent example, both in the research and just my own reporting, was voters did not look well upon John McCain picking Sarah Palin as vice president once it became clear that she did not probably have the experience and the knowledge for that job, and he was an older candidate. So I think if Joe Biden had picked somebody who was, if Joe Biden had picked Pete Buttigieg, Buttigieg. I respect Pete Buttigieg. I think there would have been some immediate questions about, is this person in their 30s qualified to be vice president? And probably some criticism of, should there be two white men on the ticket? So I think that's an example of where there would have been some effects. So in terms of Harris, I think the two effects people are going to be looking for are, does she sort of turn off voters who might like Biden? Is she perceived as too liberal? Are there voters who don't like a person of color? Are there voters who don't like a woman? So I think the short answer to that is, we've had some polls of that have compared Biden-Harris versus Biden-Whitmer versus Biden-Klobuchar versus Biden-Warren, and there seems to be very little effect so far. So I'm not really confident that there will be a huge effect downward for her. The second question would be, does she increase black turnout? As Sarah referred to, black turnout was about 66% in 2012 and about 60% in 2016. And that's a big gap, and that mattered. I think the data suggests Hillary could have won probably Wisconsin and Michigan with higher black turnout. I mean, the reason I'm skeptical that Harris necessarily adds much in terms of black enthusiasm is A, because she's not the first candidate who's black, as Sarah referred to, and second, because she ran for president, and at least all the data suggests in the Democratic primary, younger black voters preferred Bernie Sanders and Senator Warren, older black voters preferred Joe Biden. So I'm not entirely convinced. I think there's a case that if Michelle Obama was on the ticket, I would be more sort of bullish on the idea that maybe black turnout would change based on the person, but I don't think in the case of Harris, we have particularly strong evidence that she has an electoral impact. I guess the third question might be, like, how is Harris as a campaigner? And would she be bad or good? One challenge there is, we don't really have a campaign. We sort of have Zoom speeches and Zoom events and so on. But in terms of thinking about how she campaigned in 2019, she was fine in debates. She wasn't spectacular. She wasn't terrible. She didn't forget agencies she's going to close or what have you. So I think generally watching her campaign, it's hard for me to think she's going to be spectacular, but also hard for me to think she will be terrible.
No, I think Perry walked through a lot of... Look, I mean, it's a historic moment, right? Like, we shouldn't discount the amount of enthusiasm that has. And I think things like putting, you know, the vice president on the ticket is good more for party morale than it changes the outcome necessarily in any one given state. But, I mean, I think the other thing that's a factor here, specific to Biden in particular, is if he wins, he's already the oldest nominee going into the election. But if he wins, he'll be the oldest president. And so I think another factor in this VP stakes process has been thinking through, well, could this person be Biden's successor, right? And I think that puts a lot of weight then on the decision, especially in regards to Harris, because as Perry was saying, you know, she ran earlier this year and didn't win the nomination. And so I think she's obviously a proven capable politician in the fact that she's won one of the largest states in the U.S. and is a senator there. But I think she still has a lot to prove in terms of how she will operate on that elevated national stage. And it's also with COVID too, it's just going to be so much harder to campaign. Like, her and Biden aren't going to have the traditional stump speech, you know, tonight or anything celebrating the announcement. And I think that just complicates some of the rollout here.
I mean, one thing I don't know right now, but I think I'll know in 24 hours, is how does the Trump campaign see her? Like, they've had a hard time kind of hitting Biden. They feel like he's older, he's considered moderate, he's white, he's a man. And he's been pretty good, I would say, Biden, for this year and a half in running for president without necessarily, like, saying things that are easy to sort of... He said a few things on, like, you know, if you don't want to vote for me, you're not black. But he hasn't said a lot of things that are easy to attack him for being sort of ultra liberal or too liberal for. Versus my sense is, like, Harris is a senator from California. So I'm guessing her record has some things that the Trump campaign is going to seize on. And I don't know if it changes the results of the election, but I do think I expect Trump and Mike Pence to have new material to attack their opponents with. And I think that's an important cut of the campaign. And you got to imagine Biden's staff is going to be up tonight thinking about what in her record. They've already been thinking about is, what in her record do we have to defend? What should we be nervous about? And how do we go about defending her record? And where are the weakest points?
Yeah, that gets at a significant question for the party and for the campaign. Sarah, you said that a VP selection can play into party unity. Where is Harris within the spectrum of the Democratic Party? Because in my recollection, she started running for president on quite a liberal platform, progressive platform, and then course corrected somewhat back towards the middle once it became clear that a Medicare for all that abolished private insurance was a no-go for voters, seemingly. And I'm looking at the alerts that I got when Harris's name was announced today. The New York Times called her a pragmatic moderate. You know, she has sometimes leaned into the idea that she was a prosecutor. She has other times de-emphasized that. So are there parts of the party on a ideological level that are happy or sad about this result?
Harris is not an ideological departure for Biden, right? If he'd really wanted to signal to Sanders or Warren supporters, he would have picked Warren, right? That said, Harris is, you know, as the Times is saying in their push alert, right, you know, a moderate candidate, but that's not really what tracks with her voting record. She's fairly liberal. If you look, you know, one metric for that is the DW nominate scores. We often will use that in articles to get a sense of a senator or a representative's voting record. And she's pretty liberal. Now, it's true that she hasn't called, you know, to break up big tech in the way that Warren has, but she's not exactly Joe Manchin either. So it's not that Biden has made a safe pick, I would say, in Harris. But in terms of having overlap in policy goals and ideology, I think that, you know, even though they had that now infamous debate moment over segregation and the fact that Harris was bused in to school, her and Biden actually in the end had the same policy or stance on busing and integration in school. So I do think there's a lot of similarity between the two. But the fact that she's so much younger than Biden, I think, is probably the bigger thing at play here, because she could at least represent the new voice of the party. And to the extent that he's played that he's a transition candidate, it definitely could. I think a point Perry made in his article as well is I think we're moving away from a Democratic Party that has two men on the ticket, let alone two white men. And I think Harris's nomination represents that and that shift.
So it's worth thinking about the party divided in maybe three ways. Like there's an ideological divide, which I think Sarah is right, that Harris is like left. I think she's like the fourth most liberal senator, if I remember correctly, something like this. She's in the top 10 for sure. But the senators themselves often are elected statewide. So there aren't a lot of AOCs in the U.S. Democratic caucus in the Senate in the first place. So she's left, but not like Elizabeth Warren, Bernie left. So I think that's the way to think of her in terms of, so she balances Biden in terms of ideology. Now, in terms of like age, even though Harris is young herself, the party is divided between this sort of like younger cohort that wants a lot more liberalism and this older cohort of voters who don't. And the polling I saw suggested Harris was often the favorite of Democratic voters over age 45. So in some ways, she appeals to some of the same people. So she's sort of like Biden voters' second choice for president on some level, as opposed to Sanders voters. She's like the third choice for president behind Warren to some extent as well. But the big thing in the room is that in terms of she balanced the ticket for sure in terms of race. Like you saw over the weekend that there was some talk about Gretchen Whitmer, an interview with Biden. And you saw this flurry of like letters and so on from like black elites in the Democratic Party saying basically, Joe Biden, you must pick a black person or we will be offended. And I think that's the part of the party that I've been a little surprised by, I'll be honest. Like, I'm old enough to remember when the Democrats were led by a black person because it was very recently. So I was a little surprised at how, you know, ferocious and strong the push has been and the demand has been that along the lines of Joe Biden, black people supported you in the primary and basically you owe us for that, and therefore you must pick a black woman. So that's where the party unity really came in. Do I think black voters would have sat out if Biden had picked Gretchen Whitmer? No, I don't. But I think Biden would have had to deal with like a week or two of like criticism from like black elites, black columnists, black television hosts. And I think they avoided kind of elite criticism by picking a black person.
So when it comes to those three divides that you described in the party, race, age, and ideology, what parts of the party are maybe not satisfied by this pick? And is it up to a question of whether their votes are on the line or whether they might not turn out? Like, you said that she was the favorite for older people. Does this mean that young people are like, all right, screw it, I'm out?
Some of the data suggests that Biden is not beloved with people under 30 in particular. Does that mean they're going to stay home? I don't know the answer to the question, but that's where he's weakest, is like across races under 30. The problem is, but beyond picking Sanders for vice president, there's not a lot of evidence that I see that there's anybody who's under 30 who'd be a viable VP pick who's popular. Like, it would help if he picked AOC to get the under 30 vote, but you can imagine why they would create lots of other problems. So I don't think there's anybody in the current list who he could have helped with. So I think you're going to see a lot of criticism from the left in the next couple of days. Like, she's a prosecutor. People are going to pick apart the cases and argue she was too tough on crime. Too tough on sort of minor crimes. Like, there's a video of her talking about like enforcing truancy policy in San Francisco. I think that's where the criticism is going to come. People who, and it's going to be like cross-racial, like the black left, people who are protesting now. Like, Kamala Harris is not a favorite of the people who emerged out of the George Floyd protest, and those people are black often. So I think that's where the left, the Bernie Sanders people do not like her. That's where the criticism is going to come. And I think it's going to be sort of intense. And I think she's got to be thinking, like, do you lose a lot of votes there? I don't know, because at the end of the day, people who are very active in politics and very activists, they tend not to stay home election day. I think the question is more, are there complaints strong? And one thing I'll be curious about, you know, whatever you think about Trump's racial policies, he did sign a criminal justice reform bill that was pretty minor, but a bill in 2018. I wonder if Trump thinks about attacking Biden and Biden, Mr. Crime Bill, and Harris, Mrs. Prosecutor, on the lines that, like, you know, that they have been too harsh to black people. It'll be a sort of a jujitsu move, but I wouldn't be surprised if Trump tried to make that.
Yeah, no, to echo what Perry said, I mean, I think the left is going to be the most vocal critics of her. But even because, OK, we knew Biden was going to pick a woman, right? That's all we knew until like an hour ago. But even if he had picked Warren, I was always a little unconvinced that that would have appeased or placated the left in the right way. Just because, like, when you looked at her base in the primary, it was practically the same as Buttigieg's. It was, you know, college educated, a little bit wealthier and white. And so I was never terribly convinced that someone like Warren would actually bring in the youth vote. And so then, as Perry was saying, I wasn't sure who that would be. And I think there were other factors that Biden wanted to consider in his pick, which is why Harris was, I think, a smart choice for his campaign.
When it comes to the historical nature of this pick, as I mentioned at the top, just the pick in itself is historic, but also if Biden and Harris were now to win, it would surely be historic. It would be the first woman vice president, first black woman or Asian American to be selected as a running mate. That's something that we talk a lot about in the media, and it's something that got talked a lot about in the party, as you pointed out in your piece, and we've talked about on this podcast. James Clyburn, very early on, you know, he was a big supporter of Joe Biden, and along with supporting Joe Biden, he said, you should pick a black woman as a running mate. Are voters enthusiastic about the history aspect of this? Like, how does that play into electoral considerations? Or does it just shape the media narrative in a way that ultimately does affect voters' decisions?
The polling I've seen suggests the number of people who say it was very, like, the polls ask, like, is it somewhat important? Is it very important? Or is it, I've forgotten, they're extremely important if he picks a person of color as running mate. I assume if you're a Democratic voter, you don't want to say you don't care at all. So it tends to be a lot of people say somewhat important, but the very or extremely important number was way below 50%, and sometimes in around like 20 or 30 that I saw among Democrats. It's not clear to me that Democratic voters and even black voters were clamoring for a person of color. They want to win. Like, that's been the whole dynamic throughout, is that voters who are Democrats just want Trump out. And I don't think, so I think the historic nature, I'm not saying it doesn't matter to people. I think Democrats, they prize being the diversity party. I think they would prefer Kamala Harris to Whitmer in the sense that she's a minority. But I don't think they really were invested in this the way that the media coverage would be. I think it's like not going to drive a lot of votes, and it's not something I don't think is a very big priority to Democratic voters.
I think that's right. I think, though, you know, the fact that, what was it? Biden was fifth in Iowa, fourth in New Hampshire, second in Nevada. So he makes a comeback there. But then because of Clyburn's, endorsement before the primary and that black voters in South Carolina didn't break with him, I think that's gotten baked in a way that's almost outside of Biden's control. It's not reflective of, oh, this is what black Democrats want, but it's so tied up in this is how Biden got to where he is that I do think that narrative takes on something else in terms of how the media covers it.
You mentioned this towards the beginning, Sarah, but people are thinking a lot about 2024, 2028, essentially just future election cycles. Is it fair at this point to say that whatever happens in the fall, Kamala Harris is the likeliest person to be the next Democratic nominee for president after Joe Biden?
Easy question, Sarah.
Ooh, whatever happens in the fall? Well, I mean, it really, I think, does depend on the outcome. Like, again, Perry had this great line in his piece where it's like, if Biden loses, Harris's ambitions do take a hit, right? Like, ask Lieberman, ask Edwards, ask Palin. Like, these are people who, you know, were the second on the ticket, but then haven't gone on to have a successful career trying to run again for president, right? That's not to say it can't be done. You know, Richard Nixon ran for his party's nomination twice, but I think it takes a hit, right? Okay, setting that aside, let's say Biden wins. Harris, I think, then doesn't necessarily have an easier time, even if Biden were to step down and say, you know what, I'm the transition candidate. Like, think of someone like Gerald Ford, right? Like, yes, it was under different circumstances. Nixon had resigned in scandal, but he still had a very heated contested primary to get where he was. LBJ, decided not to run for re-election at one point and then handed it to Humphrey, right? Being VP, don't get me wrong, helps you in terms of a national profile and running for president, but it by no means paves the path for you or makes it that much easier. And I think it boils down to what Perry, kind of laid out at the outset for us too, is Harris wasn't a particularly effective candidate here in 2020. She can change that now. You know, she obviously has had success in California and being a senator, but how will she, change that narrative now going forward? I think that'll be interesting.
Okay, so if Joe Biden and Harris win the election, do I think Harris is the most likely, if they win the election, I think it's important. If they lose, no. If they win the election, is she the most likely Democratic nominee in 2024? I think my answer to that is like way below 50%. I want to bet the field over her. But I think yes is the answer to the question. And the reason is, I've learned my lesson. I'm old enough for when Joe Biden ran for president in 2008 because I covered him and he was a terrible candidate and didn't do very well. But the sitting vice president, or the one, a person who is vice president and who appeals to lots of black people, and I think Harris in a race without Joe Biden in it would probably be my favorite to win the South Carolina primary, right? I think that seems, seems true. Running as the vice president. I sort of think she is in a good position. And some of the people on, who I follow who are in more the left wing of the Democratic Party were sort of complaining today because they thought Whitmer was easy to beat, would have been easier for the left to beat, but they're sort of nervous already in 2024 if you're like Elizabeth Warren or whoever the left person is in 2024, if Harris is the vice president and the candidate of the black vote, which Biden was and Barack Obama was and Hillary was, I think that is a barrier of entry. I guess the reverse of that would be, I'm uncomfortable with this kind of electability focus because I think it inevitably ends up as hurting people of color and female candidates. But the black voters in South Carolina in 2020 they liked Joe Biden, but they also doubted America would be ready to vote for a black woman at the top of the ticket. So does Harris being vice president change that? I don't know. But I still think in 2024, if Biden doesn't run, I think we're going to have I don't know who the equivalent of Biden is. Like, let's say Terry McAuliffe is the best guess I have now. I certainly think there will be some, like, centrist white man who runs in 2024 and runs the way Joe Biden does. And I think that person will be a formidable candidate.
Wrapping up here, you know, when Biden announced at that debate that he was going to pick a woman for vice president, he also said that he was going to pick a black woman as a Supreme Court justice. And at the time, people thought, well, okay, he's kind of like hedging his position in case he doesn't pick Kamala Harris, because there's already so many expectations that he would pick Kamala Harris, that he would definitely pick a black woman for the Supreme Court. Now, he has obviously picked a black woman as vice presidential candidate. Do you think that still applies to his Supreme Court picks? And if so, people were thinking, well, Kamala Harris is the obvious pick there. Who's on that list now for Supreme Court, next Supreme Court justice?
We should probably look at who the appeals court judges who are black women are. I think that promise is still relevant. I don't expect him to break it. I guess I might name Sherrilyn Ifill as the head of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. She's a very prominent lawyer. She's black. I do think that's one person who I think might be a name that I would look for. I do want to talk about that promise. I thought that promise was really important. And when when Biden said, I'm going to pick a woman for vice president and a black woman for Supreme Court, I did think he was hinting that maybe I'm not picking Harris. What I think changed is I think Klobuchar would have been a realistic pick and maybe in his top three, if not for the George Floyd protests, what happened there, and the sense that she was too lenient to the police in Minneapolis, which was the sort of the center of the racial issues here. I do think once May hit, I don't know how realistic, and I'm not sure I even agree with this. I'm not sure that racism or racial equality in America was more important after May 25th than before. But I do think that sort of shrunk his list down considerably. And I think that changed. Like, when I look about this VP process, I feel sort of like there was a pre-May 25th period where there was like Klobuchar and Whitmer and Warren and Harris were the lead candidates. And I think there's a post that period, which I think Susan Rice, my sense is the runner-up here was Susan Rice. And I don't know if the reporting will show that, but I think that we've really been sort of watching a which black woman will he pick contest, and then Harris had a big advantage in that one. And I'm guessing he would not have made the black SCOTUS pick promise had he known he would have been sort of boxed into a black woman for VP, as I sort of think he was now. And I wonder, the one thing that came out consistently was that Biden's folks were nervous about picking someone for vice president who they thought would be angling for president from the jump. And it's hard to imagine Kamala Harris doesn't want to be president. It's not a theoretical issue here. So I do wonder if Biden, you know, I wonder in 2 years if Biden, how Biden will feel about this pick. Like, I do think, my sense is that Biden preferred Susan Rice for governing, but Harris made more sense for the campaign. And I wonder if some of the leaks that are coming after this will reveal what I think was going on here.
Interesting. Interesting. Time indeed will tell. Sarah, any closing thoughts here?
Overall, I don't think the Harris pick is suddenly going to change the race overnight for Biden in terms of electoral odds. He still has a heavy lead right now against Trump, right? But the fact that we're going into the conventions, all eyes will be on Harris during Wednesday when she gives her acceptance speech. I think given the factions of the party in which she could appeal to, a little bit more liberal than Biden, but still moderate to some extent, a woman of color on the ticket, I think those are strong things in which the Democratic Party wants to be moving. And while that might not be easy to quantify, because another factor is, if this is a referendum election on Trump, well, how much of that had to do with Biden or Harris at all, really, and just getting Trump out? But I think there's a lot of potential for her here moving forward on this ticket.
All right, let's leave it there. Thank you, Perry.
Thanks, Galen.
And thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, Galen.
My name is Galen Druk. Anna Rothschild is in the virtual control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.